Wakey, wakey, Jeffy Merrick. Wakey, 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 wakey.
Did anybody get the number of that car that hit me? Jeez, what was that? What happened? Why is the captain of the Blackhawks taunting me?
And now a Merrick versus Brzezinski CSI investigation. Fact, Duncan Keith was on the ice. Fact, it was heard someone uttered the phrase, wakey, wakey, either Backus or Bakey, wakey, wakey. Fact, David Backus was in fact woozy. Fact, Duncan Keith is in fact a douchebag. Fact, Duncan Keith has in fact denied saying things we all know he said before. Like comments about female officials.
Yeah.
Fact. There's a lot of outrage over something that was said on the ice and picked up by a random microphone. And yet, not enough outrage about a Blackhawks player hitting another man in the head and potentially concussing him.
After taking about a million steps into him. Yeah, not a problem there. But the fact that someone taunted a player on the ice. Come on.
It's not to say the Seabrook thing hasn't been a story, but for God's sakes, man, like this idea that, I mean, all due respect to Nick Kostanicka, who I love, but there's this outrage over a guy being taunted for trying to get up and fight. Do you understand what the impetus of this whole thing was? Backus tried to fight Taves.
Yeah.
Okay? So there's where the fuse is lit. And now he gets hit in the head. He's struggling to get back on his skates to then try to fight someone else, and he gets taunted for it. Now, I'm not condoning taunting a guy with a brain injury. It's a pretty deplorable thing to do, or to make a t-shirt out of it like someone in Chicago did.
Oh.
But are we really going to do this thing where now the wakey-wakey thing becomes the turning, the flashpoint for the series and not the hit to the head?
You know, it's interesting. It's like if everybody wants a hot dog, but no one wants to see how it's made. You know, if you want, you know, behind the scenes access, if you want microphones on the rink, if you want to see what really goes on the ice, I don't think we have the right to get this upset about it. On the other, I mean, this like a racial slur or a sexist slur or a homophobic slur. It's just two guys, well, one guy taunting another because he got concussed, because he got messed up by a hit. Is it classy? No. But you know what's classy on the ice? Not a whole hell lot. Like, not a hell of a lot of stuff on the ice is classy. Certainly not the chirps. Certainly not the taunts. So I don't think we can have it both ways. I don't think we can get this outrage, but at the same time, you know, insist on getting access to what happens on the ice.
Well, we have reached, and
moreover, your point is the right one. That's not that big of a deal. I'm sorry. It's not that big of a deal. The big deal is the hit. The big deal is the hit that cost the Chicago Blackhawks a game and may cost them this series. That is the biggest issue here. You know what gets said on the ice? Nasty stuff. Like nasty things that would curl your toes. That's fingernails on a chalkboard. Like really nasty, insensitive things get said about every player by everybody else on the ice. Let's not pretend to be naive and think that this is somehow beyond the pale, because it's not. And I'll tell you what, there's worse stuff that's happened on the ice between players as far as chirping goes. Way worse. Wakey, wakey. I mean, it's not very creative. You know, some would say it's pretty insensitive. And I think it is. But welcome to hockey. Like, what do you expect this sport to be? Like, what do you think this game is? You know, on the one hand, we want these guys to tear each other apart, you know, play a hard, heavy hockey out there. We want to see big hits. We want to see some nastiness. We want to see some hatred. And then when that spills over into taunts, we feign outrage? Come on.
Really? Well,
the
other thing about this is that every time we have these situations where Joel Quenneville grabs his junk, or someone on the Blackhawks allegedly says wakey wakey Backus, we still don't know who it is, because Keith wouldn't confirm nor deny it, and frankly you can't even tell from the video who says it. Or let me give you the best example in which all of the Mother Superiors on Twitter came out and you know, preached morality, was the Aaron Ashram thing with Jay Beagle. I'm stealing this from Leahy, by the way, but I'll go ahead and say it.
Go to sleep?
Giving the safe sign and then saying go to sleep after a fight. And the thing that is ignored in each of these situations is what? It's the moment. It's adrenaline. It's all of us sitting on our couches and watching this shit unfold, and none of us ever being in the moment where you're hardwired to say and do outrageous things. I'm sorry, but like,
yeah.
When you have a chaotic situation on the boards where Seabrook lays out Bacchus, Bacchus is challenging Taves, Bacchus is trying to get up on his feet. What do you think? Do you think Duncan Keith is consulting his junior joke book to come up with a chirp? It's in the moment.
Yep. I know. Like, honestly, dude, it's ridiculous. Having said that, it's an easy headline. It's something to get outraged about. And I was thinking about this on the weekend after the hit as well and watching Twitter explode. I think that hockey produces the most fan outrage of any of the major sports. Like, I can't think of one other sport where fans of that sport are as outraged often as they are in hockey.
I have long thought about this when it comes to injurious hits, and I have a theory. Would you like to hear it?
Yeah, please.
Yeah. Outrage occurs when you are able to rage against something, correct?
Yeah.
Now, what we have here is multiple layers of rage that you have on every hit. You are enraged at the player. You are enraged at the team. You are enraged at the culture of violence. Then you are enraged at the league sometime later for overreaction, inaction, not doing what you think they should do on the hit. There are so many different levels of rage that we reach. It's like playing Donkey Kong. We're jumping over barrels and going up to the different levels so we can go and attack the big monkey. And that's what it is. It's like there are so many different little crumbs on the road that we pick up on the way to being completely outraged over the situation that it builds to that point where Twitter explodes.
Here's another idea. Or here's another thing. Do we really want players to be nice to each other out there? Do we really want that?
But in fairness to the people that are outraged over what Keith allegedly said, I mean, we do expect a certain modicum of class, don't we? Not niceness,
no.
But at least
no.
Sportsmanship.
No. You expect that? No, I don't.
Yeah, they give an award away for it.
It's never happened in the game.
That might be because it's so rare. Like, congratulations.
Hey,
you're the one non-asshole in the NHL. Here's your prize.
Here you go. Now get off the stage.
Here you go.
Bring on the real awards. That's hilarious. But I mean, this idea that, again, it comes back to my old plank about, you know, show me an era where there was respect in the league, because it's never happened. It's not a game, at least in North American culture, that breeds respect, nor does it breed class on the ice. That, listen, man, and it's funny because you look at, and it's not just a quote unquote, you know, fourth line scrubs with the big mouth guys. I mean, Jonathan Toews stood there and engaged in an animated conversation with David Bacchus, who was on Wobbly Street, you know, who was on Sammy Kapanen Street after the Darcy Tucker hits. Jonathan Toews.
Toews would never say anything outlandish in that situation. Oh, God.
Oh,
no, not
and
Jonathan,
I'm sure.
Not ultimate competitor Jonathan Toews.
Yeah, or Sidney Crosby would never do that. No, not a chance. Listen, man. Guys try to tear each other apart. This is why I think Handshake Alley is so fraudulent. Most guys don't like it.
Right.
You know why? Because when you're playing, most guys don't like each other. You think St. Louis and Chicago feel like shaking hands? They will at the end of the series. You really think they feel like doing that? You really
Three
think so?
Three things on the Seabrook. No, not at all. Three things on the Seabrook hit. I'm going to have two moratoriums and then my proclamation about the length of suspension. Could we please have a moratorium on overemphasizing whether the skates left the ice on a hit? First off, nobody gets it right. All of the armchair people at home watching this thing are always talking about skates leaving the ice on a hit, and it's usually after the hit.
No.
It's usually someone going, oh, he jumped to hit him. Well, no, his skates left the ice after impact, as often thing. I'm no physics major.
Hang on.
But sometimes that happens when you have a violent impact on a hit.
Thank you for saying his feet left the ice and not he left his feet. Nobody leaves their feet. The feet are still attached to the legs. I know it's a sign of the thing. Whenever you hear, oh, man, he left his feet. Really? Where did he leave them? Show me on the ice where the feet are. Because poor Brent Seabrook has to walk home later on tonight. I'm sure he'd like the services of his feet. I'd hate to see him leave them on the ice.
Can we also have a moratorium on the notion of a hockey play gone bad? Now, there are certain instances in which this is applicable. I completely agree. There are certain times when you have very clean players that do things that end up being dirty, and it's not their intention. Brent Seabrook's intention on that play was to injure David Backus. I'm sorry. Yeah. It's not that he wanted to hit him in the head. It's not that he wanted him to be concussed. He certainly didn't want to do that. But his intention on the play was to hurt him. There is no other goddamn reason for him to charge into him like that but to hurt him on the play. I'm sorry. Okay. It's not a hockey play gone bad. It's an injurious play that got more injurious.
No, I would argue that hard hits like that are hockey plays. Those are hockey hits. And most hockey hits now, specifically in the playoffs, specifically in the first round, are hit for keeps. Hits for keeps. That's what you're playing. But every hit is for keeps, and you are, hang on, you are trying to injure. That is part of the game. Players never admit it, but they are trying to do that.
When the point of the hockey play is to injure somebody and you injure somebody, then you can't explain it away by saying it's a hockey play gone bad.
Oh, gone bad. Yeah, no, it's not. It's a
hockey play. It's supposed to be some, it gets Brent Seabrook off the hook by saying, oh, well, he didn't try to elbow him. Oh, congratulations, you didn't try to elbow him. All you did was come barreling in with your shoulder.
Yes. And that's what we expect out of this series. That's what people love about this series.
Here's your Lady Bing. You didn't use your elbow. Congratulations.
That's how low the bar has been set now.
Well, I mean, as we'll get to later in the show, the bar is set as, did you use your stick to hit somebody in the balls? No? Oh, congratulations. Here's Lady Bing for you. Now, and the third thing is this, honestly, to dial it back to what we're looking at here. Last postseason, we had two instances of illegal hits that resulted in two-game suspensions, and that's what this should have been. I mean, the idea that this is a three-game suspension using the time-tested formula of two regular season games for one playoff game, a six-game suspension in the regular season for this hit for a guy who's never been suspended before? No. This should have been two games. That it's three games to me speaks to a little icing on the cake to make sure that everyone in this series knows that the NHL is watching, because you know this is a powder keg. You know we are one loss away from Thunderdome in this series, and the NHL put a little extra mustard on the suspension to make sure it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And let's not forget, too, this is a new regime. This is Stefan Quintal, overseen by Bill Daly, suspension. Right. This isn't a Brendan Shanahan suspension. Was this the second suspension for Stefan Quintal, or is it the third? Anyway, it's still new regime suspension. So yeah, a little bit of extra mustard on there. Yeah, lay the shoulder in a little bit thicker. Yeah, absolutely on this one.
Michael Perino writes in. I disagree strongly, and since you and Merrick agree, I'll be the versus. Right. I study antisocial personality disorder and psychopathy and violence seriously. That's what I do. It gives a little link. I think there is a difference between people who play heavy hockey, which is different from people who act out over the line, let's say Milan Lucic incident or the Brent Seabrook incident, which is different from the explicit attitudes towards destruction, i.e. Asham with the go-to-sleep sign or other players who don't see anything wrong with what they've done. You can argue that the situation like you are, but that only explains some of it. What separates the Ryan Callahan play hockey versus the Milan Lucic asshole play versus the more awful I don't see anything wrong with what I did bullshit is totally a function of personality and self-control. So Perino is basically arguing there are certain players in this league that will constantly cross the line because they have a mental defect.
So there are more players, there are some players out there that are more dangerous than others. Okay.
Because they don't know where to draw the line and they don't have any remorse. And in Lucic's case, by the way, I don't think he has any remorse. I think Seabrook probably does, although smiling like a Cheshire cat after delivering that hit probably didn't help his case.
Yeah.
But I actually believe that maybe he has some scintilla of humanity. I don't think Lucic cares about anybody he plays against, which was what makes him so good, by the way.
Yeah, and I still can't. If you want to just get to it, if you want, we'll get to the cowbell and Danny DeKeyser. It's one of the, my favorite part about the whole thing was, like, how oblivious are you? He skates from behind, cowbells him, and then looks around to see if anyone's watching. Like I said on Twitter, guy, cameras, like, you're not new to the league. You're not playing minor midget AAA hockey in BC. You're playing in the NHL. It's a playoff game. Everybody, every camera is on all the players all at the same time. Like, sit inside a control room in a TV truck sometime and have a look at how many cameras are actually focused on the rink. The fact that he looks around to see if anyone's watching.
Mm-hmm.
There's, how many different camera positions are there in that rink? Probably about 45. I think in like San Jose and Anaheim, they're like the worst, right? Like 15 camera positions. But where Lucic was playing, any of the guys are gay. There's about 45, 50 camera positions. What do you think, bud?
I'm also a big fan, and by the way, I think Lucic probably went to the Duncan Keith school of post-game interviews, because I love the idea that what was it? It's not something that I do, or what was his quote? It was something along the lines of like, I don't know how many times I've done it, I don't remember when the last time I did it was, but I know, yeah, I don't remember the last time I did it, but I remember how many times I've done it.
Yeah, he said, I've been in the league for 7 years and I've only done it like three times.
What?
How about none times? How about that? If you want to be virtuous, none times is pretty good. Yeah. Something like
that. It's literally like, listen, give me the benefit of the doubt here, folks. I've only used my stick as a weapon on another man's testicles three or four times at most.
I love that virtuosity grab. I've only done it three times in 7 years. Yeah. You should never do, like, of all the things you're going to do, a stick to the nuts? Like cowbell style? Really?
Milan, what if you had done it a fourth time? Oh, that's criminal. Oh, I should be locked ridiculous. Up then. But I only did it three, so it's cool.
Patrick submits, Lucic has a 1940s mentality when you were lucky if there are cameras at the game, period. You can even make that argument like in the 70s and parts of the 80s as well. Like on a Tuesday night, if you're playing in Minnesota, chances are this thing ain't going to be on television, so you can get away with it.
You bring up a fair point, though, which is that we either have to – either that they have to change their behavior within the game.
No.
In language, in deeds and actions, or we need to lighten the F up about what we see and hear on these games and not, you know, demand. Listen, I don't even think we demanded a fine for Quenneville. I think the NHL decided to fine him. So the NHL has to lighten the F up, too, about some of this stuff, because who cares?
Well, I don't know if you want. I mean, at the end of it, too, they're still selling, even though it's an interesting family product, a product where children do go, and a coach grabbing his nuts, I'm sorry, towards a referee.
Oh, but on all, in all honesty, though, like, isn't that what about the kids argument the thing that put Avery into shock therapy? Like, wasn't Bettman's whole thing, explain this to my 12-year-old niece?
Hey, listen, every time I see the Dallas Stars ice girls, I say to myself the same thing. Oh, yeah, Sean Avery sure was a villain with the Dallas Stars. Oh, yeah, Sean Avery really exploits women. Every time I see scantily clad Hooters waitresses getting out there on the ice with shovels to clean the ice and bend over in front of the netminder, I say to myself, we have to really rethink this entire thing.
It's like, what do I tell my 12-year-old niece? Well, you know, every CEO has to start somewhere, honey, and
yeah, exactly.
They've chosen this path.
Let's
joining us down the line is someone who I imagine has never served time as an ice girl. It's Troy Murray of the Chicago Blackhawks radio team, and he joins us here on the Marek Przewoszynski podcast. Troy, you join us as we are talking about all of the offensive things that we've seen so far in these playoffs. What was your take on not only the Seabrook hit, but the wakey-wakey Backus aftermath?
You know what? I don't know. I mean, it's tough to comment. Obviously, you look at that hit, and I know, you know, Brett felt really bad about the hit after. It's one of those things that happens in a game, but what the NHL is looking for is, you know, contact to the head, point of contact to the head, so you kind of understand what's going on, but there's really not a whole lot you can do in the middle of the heat of stuff there. I mean, I know that certain things were picked up on the mic there. And, I think Jonathan Toews actually came out today and, you know, said things were whatever on the ice, and he said Backus challenged him to a fight. So, you know, I don't know. It's he said, you said, whatever it is. But it's all part of the game in a lot of ways. I'm not saying Brent Seabrook's hit, because obviously the league looks at those things. Didn't feel that it was appropriate and gave him a three-game suspension, which obviously hurts the Blackhawks. He's a big part of the team. And, you know, for Jonathan Toews and stuff, that was picked up. I know there's a lot of stuff as a former player that was said, and most of the stuff is not picked up. So it is what it is. You move on. These two teams have a great rivalry. It's been a great first two games, and I think the Blackhawks are looking forward to being here on home ice tonight at the United Center against the Blues.
You know, I to rewind to the wakey wakey thing a second ago, I don't think it's that big of a deal, Troy. Like, I mean, you've actually been on the ice in the NHL, and I'm sure you've heard a lot of things that you would never repeat on a broadcast, but there are just some things that get said because really in a lot of ways, you know, when you're on the ice and when you are playing, and Greg brought up the point before he came on about, you know, spirit of the moment and the adrenaline that runs through your blood and some things that you do at that moment you would never think about doing another time in your life. But at that moment, you do and say things that normally you wouldn't. I think for that reason, we shouldn't treat this as if it is a big deal. Agree or disagree?
No, I agree. I think that, you know, it is the spur of the moment, the heat of the game. I mean, I've played games against good friends of mine and said some things on the ice, and I'm going like, what was I doing? What, you know, why would I say that? This is a guy who I know and is a good friend of mine, but in the heat of the battle, you just kind of let the emotions run away, and I don't know what happened in the situation there. So, I mean, I'm not going to try and figure out what anybody said in there. Obviously, you picked up the second part of that, what was said prior to that. Maybe nobody heard, so, you know, it is what it is. You move on. I don't think it's a real big issue.
As far as being down 2-0 going back to Chicago, what have you seen as the difference in this series so far?
Well, I don't think Chicago's played up to their potential yet, but a lot of that has to do with you know, how hard St. Louis worked in those first two games. And yet, if you look at the game, they scored with 1:45 in game one to tie it up, and then won in triple overtime. In game two, 6:28 on the clock, tied the game up, won it in overtime on Barrett Jackman's goal. The Blackhawks could easily be sitting here in this situation saying, boy, we didn't play very good, but we're up 2-0 over the St. Louis Blues. So you put everything aside. St. Louis has got the two victories. Those are in the bank, and you move on to game three here. And obviously, this is a pivotal game. If the Blackhawks can win this game, give them a real good reason to believe that they can come back in this series. If they lose tonight, you got to win four straight. It's not over by any means. But obviously, this is a big pivotal game tonight, and I think that that's the only thing that they're focused on here is winning one game here on home ice and gaining some momentum and just trying to hold the court, hold service here on home court.
I know he didn't skate today, but is there any other update on David Backes, and do the Blackhawks expect to see him tonight at all?
I don't think he's going to be in the lineup tonight. It looks like Patrick Berglund is going to draw into the lineup for the St. Louis Blues. A couple guys skated at the end, and it was Yaskin, Tiarvi, and Derek Roy were the extra guy skating. So I'm thinking that Derek Roy is out. David Backes, I would be very hard pressed to think that he would be playing in the game tonight. You guys know this is the NHL playoff, and nobody's going to say anything about the extent of injuries. Everything's kept quiet. Who knows if he's going to play tonight? I just don't think that he's going to play. You know, after seeing the collision with Brent Seabrook and thinking how hard that would be to come back in just a quick couple of days.
What's your take on Corey Crawford so far this series?
He's got to be better if you look at it. Ryan Miller's made one more save, and I don't think Ryan Miller has been, you know, tremendous. I think in game one, the Blackhawks really kind of let him off the hook. He gave up 3 goals and 7 shots. He kind of settled into a little bit of a rhythm there, but you know, Brent Seabrook's shot maybe beat him over the glove. Corey Crawford has admitted, you know, I got to make those saves at the end of the game. Bottom line is Ryan Miller has made some bigger saves where they needed to be, and the Blackhawks have lost a couple of games, and Corey Crawford's got to be better.
What do you expect tonight by way of style of play? I mean, Chicago has last change. In a lot of ways, they can dictate the way this game is played, and Quenneville can get the matchups he wants against Hitchcock. Do we see a different style of game tonight, you think, Troy?
I don't think so. I think the Blackhawks need to execute their style of game at a higher level than they did in the first two games. You know, Chicago was a high pace, fast intensity, puck moving game, but St. Louis really didn't allow them to get into a rhythm in that game. They did a real nice job of just putting pucks in deep behind the Blackhawks defensemen. Didn't give them the opportunity to turn and face up ice and make those tape to tape passes. So a clean exit were not a real good part of what the Blackhawks did in that first couple of games. I hopefully, you know, think that the Blackhawks will execute their game plan a little bit better. So, you know, this is going to come at you the exact same way. They're going to, you know, try and win the game along the boards. They're going to make it hard. They're going to be aggressive. And the Blackhawks, I think, got to focus on what they need to do rather than reacting to what St. Louis is doing on the ice.
And just overall in this postseason, from the teams that you've seen, obviously in the Western Conference, Are you surprised by any of the results that we've seen so far in the West?
You mean Jonathan Quick getting lit up by the San Jose Sharks?
Yeah, that's kind of
absolutely ripping the league apart in his first two games in the National Hockey League.
I should rephrase that, Troy.
A little bit of a shocker, a little bit of surprise.
Troy, I should rephrase that. Is there anything that hasn't surprised you so far in the Western
Conference? Yeah, you know, maybe the only thing that hasn't surprised me is Ryan Getzlaff is leading the Anaheim Ducks, you know, in the series against the Dallas Stars. I mean, he's a true warrior. And, you know, everything else is like, man, you didn't see Jonathan Quick being lit up like he did. And L.A. Yeah. playing such a strong game defensively, giving up, you know, 5 goals in the first game before they came back in the third period, which probably, as that game, you know, wore out, dictated because the San Jose Sharks were ahead by so much, they probably let off just a little bit. In the last game, down by a couple, they scored 7 straight goals. Didn't see that coming. This series here is probably close to where you would expect it to be. Again, you know, Chicago could have easily been in a situation here with at least a split in the first two games. They're not. But I think that because they've got a good core group of guys inside that locker room that aren't going to panic, they know they need to be better. And, you know, tonight it will be a good sign of where this team wants to go in the playoffs, whether they really want to battle back and you know, defend the Stanley or you know, lose this game tonight and be in a real tough situation. But it's been crazy. I thought San Jose and L.A. would be a really hard-fought, post-one-goal type of game. That isn't, but it's hockey. And for Colorado to get the performance out of Nathan MacKinnon in the first two games, my goodness, 7 points. Wow. And, you know, seeing the highlights and seeing some of the game, you just look at this young kid and are so impressed. And where is the upper level of his ability to dominate here in the National Hockey League as he gets more experience and a little bit older?
Yeah, it's remarkable what he's done so far. And Paul Stastny as well, 3 goals and 4 shots in 2 games for the Colorado Avalanche. It's been quite a story. I want to talk about the history of Chicago and St. Louis because you were a key part of it. I remember specifically your Team Canada wins the Junior Gold, your North Dakota Fighting Sioux win the NCAA Division I Championship. You turn pro for the remainder of that season, 1982, and you score a key goal in the Norris Division Final against the St. Louis Blues playing with the Chicago Blackhawks, your first NHL goal. What was the animosity, what was the temperature like when Chicago played St. Louis, Troy, when you played with the Blackhawks?
You know what I mean? If you go back, and you know, it's a good point, because back in those days, it was all about what was going on within your division. Yep. And, you know, the division-based playoffs. So there was tremendous rivalries. Back in the early 80s, Detroit, at that point, really wasn't a factor. They weren't very good. They drafted that kid that, I don't know, he's doing something in Tampa Bay now. Steve Yzerman, I'm just kidding.
It's not bad.
In the corner, and obviously then, but, you know, you look at, the, you know, the early 80s, the Minnesota North Stars, the St. Louis Blues, Toronto, Chicago. I mean, those were just battles. There was always tough play, and there was a lot of fights involved in the postseason. You know, as a young kid coming in, and you know, you're only 19 years of age, and all of a sudden you're playing against these guys who are, you know, bigger, stronger, meaner, and you're sitting here going, what do I get myself into? So I'm glad to see the NHL get back to that, because the last time the two teams played each other was back in 2002, and that's when Chicago was going through some tough times making the playoffs, I think only once in 10 years in that span. But now you've got the St. Louis Blues with the big, strong physical team. You've got the Blackhawks, 2 cups in the last 4 years. It's going to be a battle. And I think for, you know, L.A. and San Jose, St. Louis and Chicago, 2 legitimate Stanley Cup contenders are going to be out in the first round, which makes it so interesting and which makes the first round so intense between these two teams. I loved playing in the rivalry back in the day. I hated the old Checker Dome. I'm sure that they hated the Chicago Stadium. But that's the way it was, and you knew that if you're going to try and get out of your division, you're going to have to go through those teams, and to get out of those get through those teams and into the conference final, you're going to pay a big price, and that's kind of where we're at right now between these two teams. You're going to have to pay a physical price if you want to get out of this round against Chicago and St. Louis.
Awesome. All right, Troy Murray, thank you so much for your time, man. Hopefully the Blackhawks do make this thing a little bit interesting and extend the pain of this series a few games longer. Thank you, sir.
The longer it goes, the more interesting it's going to get.
Oh, yes. That's true. Thanks, Troy.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Thanks, Troy. It's been a hell of a series. I know it's, you know, too bagel for the St. Louis Blues right now, but this one, hey, come on, who's not watching tonight? Who is not tuning in to St. Louis or Chicago tonight?
There is mucho awesome hockey on tonight. I guess we should probably address some of the other series that are going on. By the way, the question of the day is, what's the thing you've been most offended by? What's the most offensive thing that's happened so far in these playoffs? PuckDaddyBlog@Yahoo.com, @Wyshynski, @JeffMerrick on Twitter, #MVSW. We'll get to that and ours later in the program. Of course, tonight is also the first meaningful playoff game in the history of the Columbus Blue Jackets.
It's awesome.
Game 3, nationwide, Penguins fans invading, Blue Jackets fans defending their home turf, and a game. Listen, here's the bottom line with this series, man. They get a good performance out of Bobrovsky in Game 1, and the Penguins are down 2-0.
That's right.
That's the bottom line with the series so far.
How much do you say this is just Columbus outworking Pittsburgh?
It's all that. I mean, they are so tenacious in the offensive zone on the forecheck. It's great to watch. The thing that I love about these playoffs so far is seeing the new people invited to the dance, the new blood, the fresh blood. McKinnon doing what he's doing. And then in this series, not getting nearly enough notoriety, in my opinion, as in comparison to the Colorado kids, seeing Ryan Johansson and Boone Jenner become a tandem on the rise, the next great duo, perhaps, in the Eastern Conference, these two. Watching these guys work in the offensive zone, Jenner, the wrecking ball, Johansson, the puck possession beast, it's been really fun to watch how these guys have played so far in this series.
And the interesting thing about it as well, and this is the big breakthrough season for Ryan Johansson, but the thing about Boone Jenner is, too, we just talked about outworking opponents. And I think you and I talked about Boone Jenner, was it last year on the podcast or maybe the year before? I know last year specifically when he's still playing with the Oshawa Generals. The thing about Boone Jenner is he's not the best skater out there. Like, when you look at Boone Jenner and you break down his game, you see to himself, the weak link is probably going to be the skating. Not sure if he can skate at the elite level speed. Now, his skating has gotten better since he left the Jennies and joined the NHL. But, now, mind you, he doesn't look awkward getting around the ice, but he's still not a great skater. But he's a smart hockey player. He's a smart hockey player who plays a defensively sound game, and he never gets caught out of position. And a guy like him always reminds me that no matter how much we put a premium on speed, and we'll talk about Nathan McKinnon, I'm sure, in a second. How much we put a premium on speed, the puck still moves faster than the feet. David Krejci proves this in Boston. If you can think the game quickly, it's almost better. No, it is better. It is better than being able to move your feet fast. I would rather have a player that can move his brain quickly than move his feet quickly, because we've seen a lot of players that can blaze up and down, and man, this guy is so fast, but the hands aren't there, and certainly the brain isn't there. With Boone Jenner, I'm prepared, and so is Columbus, obviously, to sacrifice a little bit of foot speed to be that heady a hockey player playing with Ryan Johansson. I can't say enough things about Boone Jenner.
Yeah, and you're seeing a lot of really interesting performances on the Blue Jackets side. Dubinsky's now 2 games in, been fantastic. I would recommend reading the Pittsburgh Tribune Review article or column today on Malkin and Crosby and some of the bigger names on the Penguins that have not played up to snuff. I did not realize, Merrick, Sidney Crosby in his last 30 playoff games has 1 goal in the third period. Isn't that insane?
Really?
Yeah, and no goal, and he's never scored an overtime goal. Now, it doesn't mean he hasn't set up one. I have to go back and look at that, but no goals in the third period in his last 30 playoff games.
Guy sucks.
I wouldn't go that far. I was on this.
I'll take Matt Calvert any day over Sidney Crosby. You have your Sidney Crosby's. I'll take Matt Calvert.
I was on Slate's Hang Up and Listen podcast this morning, and we were talking about Marc-Andre Fleury, and they were trying to pin a little bit more on Fleury than I would as far as the Penguins' playoff disappointments in recent years. I just think that Fleury is the most obvious symptom of an overall problem with this franchise, which is that since they've won the Cup, they've not been a good playoff team. They just haven't.
Part of the Fleury thing, too, is I think that when you have a goaltender who's had those performances the past couple of seasons where the Penguins have watched him unravel in front of their very eyes, don't you think that psychologically it kind of hangs over you like a fog, that you're just waiting for that moment when inevitably he falls apart again? Like, isn't that in the back of everybody's mind in Pittsburgh?
It probably is, but I think through 2 games you can say that he's been better than average, competent.
Yeah.
I mean,
fine.
He's been fine in the series
yeah.
so far. But I actually think, you know, it's funny. He's been terrible for two straight postseasons. I actually only give him a lot of grief for last year, falling apart, needing to be replaced by Vokoun. I just think that Philly-Pittsburgh series was so batshit and so crazy and so yeah. chaotic. All the goaltending sucked in that series. All of it sucked.
Mm-hmm.
I think the second year is my problem with Fleury, not necessarily what happened in that Flyer series, because that was just a very weird series. Don't you think?
Yeah, some of those goals against the Islanders last year were
terrible.
Ones that you just...
Oh, did you see that? Oh, my God. Did you see that highlight? I think it was in one of the overtimes. That highlight where he almost did the same thing that he did on the Okposo goal last year.
Oh, where he rolls on his shoulder? That one?
Where we kind of misplayed it by the side of the net? He almost did the same. I give Pierre Maguire all kinds of shit all the time, but I give him credit for pulling that highlight. He did almost the same thing
wow.
that he did in the Okposo goal last year, which was crazy.
Yep. Oh, by the way, most offensive thing from Patrick. Most offensive? Wyshynski has not completed hashtag eat the penguin.
I'm not going to eat the penguin. I mean, if you're somebody out there that actually wants the Blue Jackets to win this series, then you actually want me to adversely affect their karma. And let's be honest here, folks. As much as you want me to eat the penguin and show and put my stomach on the line as far as backing up this bold selection that I've made, picking the Blue Jackets in six over Pittsburgh, you understand that I've got bigger fish to fry here. And by bigger fish, I mean a giant plush lion. Let's talk about the real story here, folks. It's not me not eating a penguin ho-ho or ring-ding or whatever the hell it is. It's not that. It's the fact that I am two wins away from a giant
true.
Lion getting a pie in his face.
Yeah, I know. It doesn't look good for the Kings. Although, I said this on Twitter last night, considering how stylistically these two teams play the exact same game with a high quality of athlete, curious to see what happens when it goes back to L.A. I know it looks bad, but I'm not ready to write off the Kings just
well,
yet.
Well, you can't write off the Kings... You can't run up the Kings just yet either, because the last time these two guys played in the playoffs, I mean, the home team held serve.
Yeah, and what was remarkable yesterday, you know, the seven unanswered goals, I mean, that's remarkable. But the play of the fourth line, okay, Andrew Desjardins, Rafi Torres, and Mike Brown. Hang on, Mike Brown, who couldn't play for the Maple Leafs and couldn't play for the Oilers, is the first star in a 7-2 rout of the Los Angeles Kings by the San Jose Sharks. The best game of that player's life was last night, Mike Brown. And for those that say that, you know, hitting and intimidation isn't part of the game and it has no place in the game, that was Exhibit A last night, that line.
I also want to point out that Rafi Torres has played so well in this series. This is exactly why everybody got so pissed off when he couldn't figure out how to hit guys right, because he's a good player. Like, he contributes something, just like Matt Cook contributes something back in the days when it was very easy to call Matt Cook the bane on the NHL and say you should no longer be employed, as people said. People actually said that Matt Cook had no place in the National Hockey League. Both
yes,
these guys have a place. They're both good players. It's just that they both didn't understand the boundaries of their actions. They both went over the line, and they both had no respect for their opponents. And it just goes to show that when Torres has his head on straight and he's not headhunting and being an asshole out there, that he's actually a pretty good player.
Yeah, and you know when he really excels? This is going to sound weird. I've made this point in the podcast before. It sounds weird, but it's not. He excels when he doesn't have to think. Like, he's, you know...
A lot of cerebral talk from you today about these players.
I don't know what it is. You know, normally when you hear a player talk about another team or how you play against other players, what do they always say? We have to take away time and space. If you're playing against Rafi Torres, maybe the best thing you can do is give him time and space. Because Rafi Torres is at his best when he's just in reaction mode. Because he's a really good hockey player. Like, he's strong on his skates. He has, you know, for his level of play, he has really good hands. As long as he can be in a situation where he doesn't have to think, he only has to react. Rafi Torres is an excellent hockey player. That's why in a scrum, you know, when the pucks are flying over the place, Rafi Torres is fantastic. When the puck's down low and it's adrenaline and it's excitement and you don't know what's going to happen next, that's where Rafi Torres shines. Like, if I'm playing against Rafi Torres and I'm the coach of the LA Kings and Torres has the puck, I'm telling my defenseman, don't challenge him. Back him up. Let him think about the game. Because when Rafi Torres is thinking versus reacting, I don't know that he's as good a hockey player. Does that make sense?
Because
that's kind of how I feel about Rafi Torres.
For sure.
And by the way, and he's a good Stouffville boy, so Stouffville represent.
Oh, here we go, here we go. No, I think the series is far from over, too.
But hang on.
Yes.
Hang on. Have you had any interaction with Bailey in the past couple of days?
We have.
Yeah?
We have. We've interacted a little bit.
On Twitter? On the Twitters?
I sent him the numerical pie as a taunt.
Oh, nice. After the
game was about 7 to whatever last night, I sent him a screen cap from American Pie after...
Hang on. For those that don't know...
Jason Biggs made love to the pie and smashed it, and I just wrote the word shame.
Oh, my. For those who don't know what we're talking about, last night, Greg and Bailey, the mascot for the Los Angeles Kings, engaged in a little Twitter wager. The loser has to endure a pie in the face.
Yes.
From the other side. Now, I don't know if Bailey's going to deliver the pie to your face personally or have a surrogate come in and do it on his behalf, or whether you want to deliver the pie, your hand to pie to face, or you're going to have a West Coast MVSW Puck Daddy representative do so.
I'm starting to wonder exactly when I should start researching
because pie delivery services. Listen, man, Anschutz is a, Anschutz Entertainment Group, AEG, is a pretty rich company. I think they should fly you out on their dime.
I wonder if I can get Wild Wing, the Ducks mascot, to do it.
Oh, do you understand?
Plushy on plushy pieing.
Oh, man, I don't know if the world can, I don't know if the world's ready for that.
Maybe not. So there's that series. I don't think it's quite over quite yet. McKinnon.
Bigger.
So McKinnon, Landeskog, and Stastny's line is ridiculous. And if you look inside the numbers as far as what the Minnesota Wild tried to do against them from game one to game two, here's how it changed.
Okay.
They tried to throw copious amounts of Zach Parise and Mikko Koivu, two of their best all-around players, against the Landeskog, McKinnon, and Stastny line. And the end result is that they even got better in the second game against the Wild and put up 10 points between them. I mean, it was insane. It's insane how good that line is playing right now.
And how well that team is playing right now. And, how good some of that, no-name defense is playing right now. And Semyon Varlamov is playing right now. And let's just make the points we all have it out there. They're doing all this without – we talk about the speed of the Colorado Avalanche and the tempo they play at. Dude, they're doing this without their fastest player.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're doing this all without Matt Duchene.
You think he's faster than McKinnon?
I think he's more sudden than Nathan McKinnon, but full stride, I think McKinnon is faster. But as far as like things happening, like when I look at Matt Duchene, I think to myself, more sudden than speed. When I see McKinnon, I say, okay, yeah, we look Clydesdale gets things going, and then he hits top speed, and he's just graceful, and he plows through guys and turnstiles them. With Matt Duchene, though, I think it's more like water bug, and he's just really quick and really sudden. So it's a different kind of speed.
Well, the Wild make a goalie change for Game 3 as young Darcy Kuemper goes in. And we'll see. We'll see what that does. I mean, Bridges wasn't good, I think, in the first two games. And they're gonna throw copious amounts of Matt Cook against the McKinnon line and see what that does. Yep. But overall, like I said on the blog this morning, I think they've got to embrace their inner Lemaire. They need to slow this thing down to a snail's pace. They need to take away every ounce of speed in this series if they can and stop being on their heels in the defensive zone and collapse around their goalie. Just go D for this game three and see what happens.
So play really tight, body to body, is what you're saying?
Yeah, like the Avs do, right? Man on man.
Well, it'd be like in all three zones. It's funny because I was doing the on Friday we had maybe the best junior game I've seen. Well, certainly all season, but maybe the last couple of years, the Kelowna-Portland game. And the Portland Winterhawks, their main caveat is speed. Although the Kelowna Rockets are ranked number one in the country, and the first 10 minutes, Portland's up 3-0, like fast. And you think this thing's over, and then Kelowna just started to slow it down. Linger a little bit longer when you pin a guy on the boards. Like there are tiny little tricks you can try to slow the game down. Kelowna ended up doing that and won the game 5-4. I agree with you. Now that Minnesota has the last change and can dictate the matchups, I'm guessing they try to do the exact same thing against the Avalanche. Just slow it right down.
The Ducks and the Stars, I think the big story in this series is that Ryan Getzlaff is slowly morphing into Sloth from the Goonies. It's getting a little uncomfortable. I'll be obviously that's the big story.
What a playoff, though, eh? Not just playoff, but what a time in that man's life.
Yeah, right.
You know, between the shot in the face, he'll have some consideration for the Hart Trophy, the Olympic gold medal, the career year, and the day after he gets one right in the mush. His wife gives birth to a baby daughter.
Yeah,
it's just that kid is gonna have if it happened to me, I'd be reminding my daughter of that, the puck in the face, the goal, like every single day of her life, to the point where it's like, Dad, stop telling that story.
Here's your new daughter, Daddy. Don't drop her.
Drop, baby. Getz Laf is one of those guys that I've always, and this year this has been the best year we've ever seen him play hockey. But up until this year, didn't you get the sense about Ryan Getz Laf that he is as good as he decides to be when he wakes up in the morning? That if he decides to be the best player in the league, he's got the skill set to do that. And if he says, I'm going to take a day off, he'll just take a day off. But for some reason this year, maybe it was, he really wanted to make the Olympic team. Maybe everything just came together. He was healthy. Who knows? A lot of things happen off the ice that affect you. Everything just came together for Ryan Getz Laf this year.
I'd love to know what happened in those years when the stats kind of dipped a little bit, if it was injuries or what it was. But it's clear that there was a recommitment to hockey this year, and I think
totally.
Part of it was the captaincy. I think part of it was Ryan, the Bobby Ryan trade, a number of different factors. But also I think he and Boudreau get on pretty well. I mean, Boudreau was one of these guys that immediately when he got there put over Getz Laf as a leader almost immediately, and I think that kind of goes a long way.
Didn't he say he's the best captain he's ever had?
He might have said he's the best captain he ever had, but again, bar is low.
Was that just bigging up his captain with the Ducks, or that a sideways swipe at Alexander Ovechkin?
No, I couldn't imagine that.
Oh, no.
Bruce would ever take a shot at somebody who ran him out of town.
Hey, you want to do the Callahan non-goal yesterday?
Well, that's what we're getting over to the Eastern Conference now. We've covered Pittsburgh. We've covered ball Lansing in the Boston series. We have to talk about Montreal and Tampa, and we also probably have to give some lip service to the Rangers and Flyers. Let's talk about Montreal and Tampa now. No goal by Ryan Callahan in Game 3, which could, of course, change the direction of that game. How did you see it, sir?
I think that Carey Price played Francis Chiron like a fiddle. I think that Carey Price, if you look at what happened, now, I still think it should have been a goal. I still think it should have counted, but by the letter of the law rule, was it 69.3, Wish? The NHL has themselves covered in this one. They do. I still think that should have been a goal. Killorn is pinned in the net by PK Subban. The moment he's able to get free, he does. But if you watch Carey Price on the play, watch how far he overcommits to the left. Now, Carey Price is not a new netminder. Carey Price is a very smart positional goaltender. You do have to ask yourself, and this isn't grassy knoll shit either, guys, why does he overcommit to the left? So he can engage in contact with Alex Killorn, knowing that he's going to get the call. Mm-hmm. I firmly believe this 100%. He overplays, he bumps with Killorn, and Chiron bites on it.
Mm-hmm.
No goal.
I completely agree with you.
It's a hard, hang on. First of all, it is a hard call to make for that official at that moment. Like, yep. One of the things I think we miss, because we look at things from a bird's eye view when we're watching hockey. Just put yourself down at referee's level. Like, put yourself in Francis Chiron's skates at that moment and see what he's seeing. Damn, I don't know if I could make that call. I don't know what I would do. I don't know what the call that I would have made was, knowing that I don't have the bird's eye view and 8 or 9 different looks at it.
Well, I kind of disagree with you. I think the easy call to make is no goal in every situation. I mean, you have the optics of the opposing player in the paint. You can go no goal there and probably feel okay with the call, because there are, as we've seen in the rule book, there's about 17 different entry points for goalie interference when a player is inside the net.
Yeah.
It's like you can feel confident that you could wave it off. But, as much as it pains me to completely agree with Carey Fraser on anything, I have to admit that I think he hit the nail on the head in his piece today on TSN. Like Merrick said, Price initiated contact on that second time. And if you go by the letter of the law, it says that if the goalie does initiate contact, it's still a goal.
Because he's in the crease.
Because
he's in the crease.
And I essentially agree with what Fraser said. He called it a loophole, and it is a loophole, and it should be closed. I mean, it's a way for these guys to draw contact. And furthering that, over on the opposing network, the one that's losing its rights soon. Frazier actually put together a nice little highlight package of the ways that Carey Price initiates contact with players that are in his crease, kind of skating up,
really?
Putting his blocker on their backs, and initiating a little bump here and there. Enough contact to where if he gets scored upon with the guy screening him, it almost looks like the guy is making contact with Price. So he's a very crafty goalie when it comes to goalie interference, and this speaks to two things. It speaks to the NHL needing to revise and tighten their goalie interference rules and stop coddling these guys. And it, of course, Jeff Merrick speaks to what? Oh, that hallowed plank in the Puck Daddy platform. Coaches, challenges for goalie interference.
Here's what I think, though. I think that even if that thing would have been a coach's challenge, or if all goalie interference calls go to automatic video review, I don't know that it would have been overturned. Like, I don't think you can. I don't think
in this case,
night,
no.
No,
in this case, no.
It would not have been overturned unless you do tighten up the rules on goaltender interference vis-a-vis goaltenders initiating contact themselves on that play in order to get the call. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think the NHL would have reversed it on that one if there was a coach's challenge. But I'll tell you one thing that it screams more to, and that is video review of goalie interference. And you know who wants that wish? You know who wants that more than anybody else in the NHL? Referees. Because it is so, as I talked to one this morning, said, there's no way that we want any part of goaltender interference calls. It is so hard, specifically now in the playoffs with so much at stake and so many bodies around the net, calling goaltender, and now you have goaltenders who know how to sucker officials into getting the call. We really would not mind at all if this thing went upstairs and took that power out of referees' hands. But here's the problem.
What's that?
The problem is no one's going to lobby for it at the GM's meetings.
Yeah.
Like, there's no Ken Holland, there's no Brian Burke that's leading the charge for this. What has to happen? You know what has to happen? A team has to lose a series on a goaltender interference call. A team has to lose the Stanley Cup on a goaltender interference call.
Ugh.
Because until that happens, nothing's going to change. The officials are still going to be out there in a lot of ways throwing darts at this one, guessing whether it was really goaltender interference or not.
Mm-hmm.
Some team has to have a catastrophe happen to them before that gets changed, I think, anyhow. Because there's no appetite for it.
There isn't. You're absolutely right. Finally, in these first-round series going on, 1-1 Rangers and Flyers. How about Jason Atkinson? You talk about guys that have all of a sudden come out of nowhere to influence a series. The double minor for high-sticking in Game 1 cost the Flyers the game. And yet in Game 2, he's flying around the ice in only 9 minutes of ice time and scores a pretty pivotal goal in the game.
Yeah, you know, and he's one of those players, too. He's an undrafted guy. I remember watching him play with the Kitchener Rangers, World Cup 2010, and thinking to myself, he's going to be one of those guys that we look at and say, he was a really great junior hockey player, but he's probably never going to play pro hockey. You know, he's a little bit, you know, height challenged, weight challenged. I mean, he's not the biggest guy out there, the beefiest guy out there. I love it when I see guys like that make the NHL. And I love it when I see guys that are that involved in outcomes of games. You know, more so games than Game 1. I don't know where you are. I love the Jason Atkinson story.
That's pretty amazing. You went total robot for about a minute, and then you're back and normal again.
Did I?
Yeah, but it's fine. It was really cool. It was almost like an android came onto the podcast and was a huge Jason Atkinson fan.
You know, I think you've programmed this to be the anti-Pierre Maguire. Whenever I start wanking off about a kid playing junior, like whenever I go back to his OHL days, you just make me go into robot voice.
Listen. I am not going to say anything if I don't have anything nice to say. But once again, I will reiterate, I feel like I've learned a lot about college, juniors, birthplaces, who runs sand dunes with each other in the off season. I've learned a lot about these things during NBC broadcasts.
I wanted to bring something up during the Winter Classic that I totally didn't, and I just remembered right now. Did you notice anything about the NBC coverage of the Winter Classic?
I didn't. I was there. I didn't get to see the NBC.
Oh, season. Of course. Pierre did none of that.
Why?
I don't know. It's almost as if there was like instruction from Sam Flood. We're not going to do that style of game. that we're not going to do, you know, the history of all these hockey players and run down their college and junior stats and where they're from and what their twin brother's name is. It was bizarre. Now, it might have just been the times because I was flipping back and forth. But it seemed as if, and if you watched it on NBC, folks, back me up or shoot me down on this one, it seemed as if that was the one game that I've seen this year where Pierre didn't do that. And that's his calling card. Like, that's, whether you like it or not, that's the Pierre Maguire calling card. But for the Winter Classic, he didn't do it.
Well, and it's interesting because I think Leahy's theory was that they're going the extra yard with this biographical information this year because they do expect a more casual fan audience to tune in for these rivalry games in the first round. So, I don't know. It's interesting to say the least that we're getting all of this information, but there it is. What is the thing that you find most offensive in these playoffs so far? That's the question. Marty Rapp writes in, it's the hypocrisy of St. Louis fans. The most offensive moment in 2014's playoffs thus far has been the hypocrisy of St. Louis Blues fans. Brent Seabrook's hit on David Backes definitely crossed the line, and Seabrook's mistake cost the Hawks an important win, and Seabrook cost himself three games. But reading the St. Louis fans and media Twitter react as if their players haven't and never would lay out a hit like that is completely offensive. Look in the mirror.
I watch Ryan Reeves tonight. Come on. You think for a second Reeves isn't going to lay a little something extra thicker into someone? Come on. For sure.
Gil Santos writes in, hello, sirs. It has to be Milan Lucic spearing Danny DeKeyser in the family jewels. There's no place for that kind of stuff in hockey. I can't believe some of the Boston media and Boston fans were actually defending the actions because it's playoff hockey. Let's just clear that up. There was one article on Boston.com written by some knucklehead who defended it as playoff hockey. Somehow that became like the Boston media. It was not the Boston media defending. I didn't see one person in the Boston media that I recognize saying that this was not a deplorable play. So Peter P. writes in, all of the officiating has been truly offensive. Each game is getting worse and worse. I know Merrick will rush their defense, but it really has just been atrocious the entire playoffs.
I disagree completely. But what are you going to do? People see what they want to see.
Ryan Thomas writes in, the most offensive part of the playoffs was that woman in St. Louis showing her nasty cans during the third period of game two. Taylor Stevens would be disappointed. Did you see that, sir? The flash?
No, I didn't see that. No.
A woman during a face-off flashed her breasts at the camera.
Wow. I missed that. No.
It wasn't. And now, listen, there is quite a bar to meet when it comes to that sort of thing. And let me just say for the record, I still give the advantage to the Vancouver Canucks fan.
I remember that one. Yeah, yeah.
Exposed the goods by the penalty box.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Will Peterson writes in, most offensive and offensive, if you are a Kings fan, is the Kings play through two games. If you are not a Kings fan, it's the San Jose Sharks play through two games, respectively. I mean, that McKinnon kid is good, but damn, San Jose made quick work. Quick work.
Get it? Get it?
Of the chum offered up by LA.
You know what mine is?
What's that?
We saw it last night. I know we focus in on the non-goal by Ryan Callahan. It's a judgment play. But the one thing that I'm still shaking my head at, after that icing, when all the Montreal players are bagged and barfing and aren't allowed to change, how is Carey Price allowed to go to the bench to get his skate worked on?
How?
And then all of a sudden, you know, the Habs players have enough time to catch their breath, and here we go, let's drop the puck. Price is the smartest guy on the rink last night. Whether it was, getting the goal overturned by bumping Killorn, or going to the bench because he lost an edge. Okay. How is that allowed to happen? Right after an icing. And they've used their timeout, right? So, I mean, it's not as if this is just a coincidence. I mean, it's deliberate. Just buying himself another timeout.
Indeed. My most offensive thing is the spearing stuff. I think spearing is just a deplorable act. And the idea that you only get $5,000 fine for it is equally as deplorable. But frankly, I guess not offensive, but my most disappointing thing has to be the Tampa Bay Lightning. It is not Anders Lindback's fault they're losing this series, but I would love to have seen what Ben Bishop could have done in this series. And we're probably not going to see him. It doesn't sound like he's going to play in game four either. But the fact of the matter is, Merrick and I were talking about this before the show, you can name all of the players on the Lightning that have stepped up their game for the postseason because they are Steven Stamkos and Andrej Palat. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
You know what it is.
Has not stepped up to a playoff level of compete in this series.
It's funny, too, because even if, I mean, if you just look at the series and look at the three games and take all the emotion out of the crowd yesterday at the Bell Center, okay? Like, it's a remarkable event. If you're a hockey fan and you've never been to Montreal to see a game, do yourself the favor. Go. Like, you really have to. Even better if it's a playoff game. There's nothing like that experience. But if you remove all of that and just focus on the hockey, did we not just watch three regular season hockey games?
Mm-hmm.
'Cause that's the way it felt to me, Wish. It really did feel like I've just watched three regular season games.
Yeah.
There wasn't a whole lot about, other than the gamesmanship of Carey Price, there wasn't a whole lot about those three games where I said, yeah, that's a playoff brand of hockey. I didn't see it.
All right, setting up tonight, no David Backes for game three. That is official.
Okay.
No Fedor Tuukka for Columbus in game three. He only played about 7 minutes in game two. But Foligno back for game three, so expect some more forechecking because, you know, Lord knows Columbus needs more of that. McKinnon versus the Wild tonight. Please do check that out. And then, of course, later on tonight, 9:30 start. The Dallas Stars try to get back in that series against the Anaheim Ducks. And who knows? Maybe they do. Maybe they get a little spark playing at home.
It's at home. Who knows?
Who knows? But those are your games tonight. It is going to be a ton of fun. 7 o'clock start in Minnesota, though. Kind of interesting there, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of a rare one. Yeah, Colorado Mini at 7.
I guess they wanted to maybe clear out. They wanted to clear out coverage for that that Chicago. I don't know. Maybe they stagger it so they can get all the people watching the end of that Chicago game. Who knows?
But, well, you got to clear out because you got Anaheim Dallas. Both those are on. Those are both TSN games tonight.
And for the stadies,
2.5 hours
for the stadies. Pens and BJs at on and NBCSN. NHL Network has your Avs and Wild. CNBC has all the financial information you'll ever need, along with the Blues and Blackhawks. And then NBCSN comes back at 9:30 with Anaheim and Dallas. I guess you have to. Pittsburgh, Columbus will get a big rating for them tonight. Chicago, St. Louis, though, man.
Does Chicago do well nationally? I don't know. It's a better question for Steve Laporte.
Their local ratings drive a pretty large number.
They do.
There's huge interest in both of those series. I just feel like now the interest in that Chicago series is off the charts after what happened. But then again, that's a 2-0 series. The ones 1-1. They probably made the right call, put Pittsburgh Columbus on. All right, we've gone over our allotted time. That's not true. There is no allotted time. We have to go, though.
What's our penalty? Like we get a penalty for going over our allotted time? Really?
Our penalty is tomorrow we have to start the show 6 minutes late.
We did that today.
That happen anyway.
Yeah, that was me today. That was my bad. Oh, tomorrow, remind me to tell that story. By the way, someone reminded me here on Twitter a second ago.
Sorry.
That's all right. Just a funny story. Oh, and by the way, tomorrow on the program, I'll be heading down the DVP to do the show from the Fan. You know why, Greg Wyshynski? I will tell you why.
Please.
Because great friend of the podcast, great man himself, bon vivant, man about town, the man they call Noof, Terry Ryan, live in studio tomorrow. The great TR is in town, and he's dropping by MVSW tomorrow. Oh, yes.
I always like when they're in studio.
Have you read the book yet?
Not yet.
Okay. You know how we love it when hockey players are honest, and sometimes it's really tough to be honest about your life and the things that you've done, and you want to cover some things up because they may not be the most flattering events that happen to you. Terry Ryan had a, let's just say, intimate exchange with someone who turned out to be a transvestite, and he put it in the book.
Wow.
That's how wide open TR is in his book. Yeah, buddy.
Sounds like tomorrow's episode maybe you must listen. All right.
Yeah, it will be.
Enjoy the hockey tonight. Thanks to Troy Murray for joining us, and thanks to everybody for listening to the show today, and we will talk to you on tomorrow. Bye.